And this is The Science Show on ABC Radio National. Greg Falzon is in similar mould, using maths to explore everything from tracking creatures in the bush to testing breast tissue for signs of cancer. Greg from Maltese stock is at the University of New England.
Well, essentially, yes, we can. It's slight changes, ever so slight, in the actual structure of collagen, a protein in breast tissue. Those very, very slight changes in structure can be picked up with X-ray diffraction. And yeah, once we perform the image analysis, we can actually determine the probability that the tissue is normal, benign, or malignant, and also estimate the grade and the type of pathology.
Now, when you say we, is it you or the machine? Is the machine saying, ping, we've got a connection?
Well, essentially, once we create the algorithms, so we actually create the smarts behind the machine, then, yeah, the machine will go ping.
I see.
But there's a lot of thought that goes into that.
So you've got to follow it up, because obviously you want to get the right answer for the patient. You can't just say, oh, well, the machine says, and that's it.
Well, I would definitely not recommend that approach. We definitely would like to only give a probability that the tissue is suspect. Yeah, you really need expert evaluation and further analysis. Basically, the whole idea of our research project is to actually come up with a warning device, a way of sorting through very rapidly large numbers of biopsy tissues. Furthermore, we hope to extend that knowledge, that information that we gain from this process, into larger scale screening studies so we can pick up very, very, very minute changes in the breast tissue.
How new, how novel is this technique?
There's many, many, many layers to it. X-ray diffraction has been around for a very long time, but the idea of using it for cancer diagnosis is quite novel. It's only been around for the last decade or so. That in itself is incredibly novel. And I think it's a valuable way forward in the way we go about diagnosing breast cancer.
What will be the consequences, knowing in advance quickly whether there's something to be followed up or not?
Oh, for sure. Yeah, that's one obvious direction. I think there could be deeper ramifications for this type of research. Fundamentally, it paves the way to a whole new type of technology and objective measures of diagnosis that we aren't able to utilise and really dream of at the moment.
So instead of Greg House in the series on television, you know, about 42 minutes into the programme going, you know, when he looks into the far distance and you can see going click, click, click in his head, instead, in the first minute of the programme, someone will get your gear out for, you know, not remote sensing, but for exact nanosensing, and you'll see a clue that will tell you something's going on.
Yeah, for sure. That's exactly what we intend to do. But it will actually have objective measure to it. So we can base our reason for why we think there's cancer there on scientific knowledge that says that if someone has breast cancer, they'll experience these changes in the collagen structure of the breast tissue. And once we image that with X-rays, we know, according to our mathematics and image analysis, that a particular pattern will occur, and we can say, yes, for sure, there's a very high probability that that's cancer.
It's in the molecules and in the algorithm. Now, if you've got an algorithm, if you've got a means for analysing what's being seen, you can also do it on a vast scale. So you're doing it from the sky as well, looking down on the ground and being able to tell what's going on with remote sensing, are you?
Ah, yes, for sure. One thing that comes up with much of the mathematical and statistical research that we do is that it is transferable to so many different areas. I use a mathematical technique called wavelets. It's been called the mathematical microscope, and that's exactly right. You can use it to look at images at very, very large scales, such as aerial or satellite imagery, or you can use it to look at images of nanoscale objects, and you can look at these images over multiple resolutions and scales, so you can get the fine details and the very, very coarse information out.
Where does the betong come into this story?
The betong. Well, basically, what we're doing with the betong is looking at changes in how they move at different scales. What you'll find is when they're searching for food, they'll move in a very erratic pattern with lots of small-scale changes. But when they're travelling in between feeding sites, there won't be such a large change. It'll be a very direct, straight line of travel between places. And once they find that piece of food, the truffles, as they're called, they start going crazy and start moving around like mad. And the analysis that we use in breast cancer is directly transferable to analysing how betongs look for their food.
God. How do you monitor the betong? Is it satellites from the sky or what?
Well, the monitoring study is actually conducted by Dr. Carl Vaness. The way I understand it is he has a cotton spool he attaches with surgical adhesive to their back, and this tiny little spool moves out over the night and eventually detaches, and from that they can actually very, very accurately chart where the betong has been.
I see, yeah. So it's not high technology, it's old bits of string.
Yeah, pretty much. It's quite amazing. You can go from looking at cattle studies where they have very high-performance GPS, real-time tracking units, all the way down to betong studies where they used radio telemetry and pieces of string. Yeah, it's the whole kit and caboodle. Everything comes into it.
Well, which ones are you directly involved in yourself over this range?
Well, I analyse satellite imagery. I analyse aerial imagery. I'm actually working on an algorithm at the moment that will greatly increase the efficiency of fertiliser applications out west in the wheat fields.
Hang on. Fertilizer applications. 1 minute a betong, then breast cancer. Now you're looking at fertilizers. How come?
It's pretty much the nature of my role in the spatiotemporal analysis support unit. The fundamental skill to have is advanced mathematics, statistics, and computer programming skills. If you can do that, then you've suddenly got a whole heap of people that will come to you and say, hey, I've got this problem, can you help me?
What's the problem with fertilizers?
Okay, fertilizer is quite expensive, but it's very, very vital to put on a lot of crops such as sorghum out west, out near Moree. But when they're applying it, the current technology is basically just to apply it in a blanket fashion across the entire field. Now, it's well known from our current research in collaboration with the Precision Agriculture Research Group here at UNE, headed by Professor David Lamb, that there is significant spatial variability in that crop, say sorghum. So one patch of the field might not need that much fertilizer, whereas another patch will desperately need heaps. So they need an online airborne sensing algorithm that is able to very, very rapidly determine as this plane's moving 3 meters above the ground at 180 knots or something ridiculous like that, very rapidly, what is the fertilizer requirements up ahead so we can change our fertilizer rate application to suit the requirements of the crop.
And you get that from a light aircraft flying 3 meters above the ground?
Yes. I quite enjoy it. I love it, actually.
Yeah. I can tell.
Yeah, thank you.
The ever-enthusiastic Dr. Greg Falson at the University of New England, Armidale, showing maths can be used for everything. Betongs, cancer, farming, you name it.